I want to be sure to get to our text in Exodus chapter 14. And this morning in Sunday school, I want to speak on a horrible, awful, paralyzing sin. It's one that I've been guilty of on numerous occasions. And you have too. You say, my soul, what sin is that? It's very simply this. Doubting God. And we find the nation of Israel in a very perilous point. Exodus chapter 14, verse number 10. And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid. And the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord, and they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. And Moses said unto the people, fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show unto you this day. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. What I've read to you is a major portion of the excerpt of the nation of Israel being at the Red Sea with the armies of Pharaoh closing in on them. And it's at this point that doubt grips their heart and paralyzes them. Now, before I get into the crux of the lesson this morning, I want to remind you, can I just take you on a very brief history of Israel to this point? God called a man named Abram out of Ur of the Chaldees. Eventually, he would change his name to Abraham, and he'd say, now, Abraham, I'm going to make you a promise. I want you to look at all those stars. You see all those stars? I think it was this last week, we put another vehicle of some type on the planet of Mars, and everybody's all excited about that. And I guess that's a great thing for human beings, but when I think of the fact that God created it all, it sort of dwarfs it, you know? But God said, Moses, I want you to look, or he said, Abraham, I want you to look up and see those stars. He said, your children are going to be like those stars. There was one big problem. He had no children. Long story short, God would bless him with a child named Isaac, and it would be through Isaac that Abraham's seed would be perpetuate, would go forward, and we would find that Israel would grow as a country. Now, it's during this time that Israel is enslaved by Egypt. Egypt being a type of the world. Here Israel is in bondage, and they're crying to God for a deliverer. They're saying, God, please send us someone to deliver us. Please send us somebody to deliver us. And they're praying that for many years. And finally, the heart of God is moved, and there's a young man by the name of Moses who's born. I won't go into great detail in the story, but I'll promise you this. Nobody ever came into this world and had an early childhood like Moses. Your mother ever put you out on a basket in a river and say, all right, whatever happens to you, happens to you. Of course, we know it was the providence of God. And of all places, that little basket showed up at Pharaoh's daughter's house. Now, I have to admit, humanly speaking, I would have said, that's the last place that boy needs to be. Pharaoh's the one who said that all of the Israelite children should be killed. Why in the world would you let that basket go to Pharaoh's daughter's house? That's the reason God's God and I'm not. His ways are higher than mine. She fell in love with that little boy, raised him as her own. Moses was raised in the lap of luxury. And you imagine he had all the amenities that a child would ever want. But there came a day as Moses grew older that he had to make a choice to associate with the people of God rather than Israel. And he made that choice and it cost him everything. You talk about culture shock. I was talking to somebody here recently just before the service. They lived in Tennessee and then they moved here. That's culture shock. You don't see tractors on the road in this area, do you? Pace of life is a little quicker. Well, let me tell you, culture shock. We find that Moses goes from Egypt in the lap of luxury to the backside of a desert. For years he had been used to hearing his servants talk, and now all he hears is sheep. That'd get on your nerves after a while. And Moses spent 40 years on the backside of a desert. And what he failed to realize at the time, and it's just like us, we don't see things usually until it's in hindsight. But all that time, God was preparing Moses. He was leading flocks in a wilderness, but God was going to use him to lead a large flock out of Egypt. And so one day, Moses is called of God. He stands before Pharaoh, and he delivers a message to Pharaoh that Pharaoh does not like. The Lord has said, let my people go. And Pharaoh said, mm-mm. Who is the Lord that I should obey Him? And it was after that dialogue that God sent 10 rounds of persuasion to Pharaoh, called the 10 plagues. You know what the story of the 10 plagues teaches me? It teaches me this. God won't make you go against your will, but He has a way of making you willing to go. And Israel has a front row seat to all of these supernatural things. Lice. Water turned to blood. Pestilence. I mean, with every round, Pharaoh and Moses go back and forth. It's really Pharaoh and God. And Israel is watching this. Had I been an Israelite, I would have said, whoa. There's no way the meteorologist would have ever predicted this. Listen, this is the hand of God. And they're seeing it over and over and over again. Until finally, Pharaoh's stubborn heart is broken when his firstborn dies as a result of the last plague. And finally, Pharaoh says, get out. Every last one of you, get out. Take the kitchen sink. Take everything. Get out. And they did. And I'm going to tell you, had I been a member of Israel during that day, I would have just celebrated and danced the whole way out. We've been praying for this for years. We just saw the hand of God moving 10 mighty rounds. And now Pharaoh has said, let us go. I'll tell you, had I been Israel, it would have been euphoria. But you know, it wasn't long after that feeling that you find them in Exodus 14 doubting God. Up one moment and crash the other. But before we get into the lesson this morning, I want to invite you to do something. Don't be too hard on Israel. Because there's a little bit of that in every one of us. It's amazing how one day God can give us great deliverance and another day we're lying down in despair. And so this morning, I want to teach you some things about doubting God. And listen to me, in the day in which we live, if there's anything that we've got to do, we've got to trust Him, not doubt Him. Even when we can't see clearly, even when the circumstances around us are uncertain, listen, we have to learn to trust Him. And one of the best things you can do in your life in the Sunday school hour this morning is if there's doubt that's in your soul and there's fear that's gripped your heart, just simply to yield to God, admit it's there, and let God help you this morning. Now, there's several things that I want to teach you from the passage this morning about doubting God. The first thing is this, is that everyone is capable of doubting God. Everyone is capable of doubting God. In Exodus 14, you know what? We find the entire nation of Israel. They're doubting God. They're doubting God's plan. But you look in the Bible and you know what? You'll find that you and I are in a long line of people who have doubted God. Why, the father of the nation of Israel, Abraham, doubted God. You remember when his wife Sarah laughed? Not at a good joke. but at a promise of God. You look through Hebrews chapter 11 and you find the heroes of the faith. Now listen, this helps me this morning. You know what comforts me is I look back at the heroes of the faith and I saw where many of them doubted God at some point. It gives people like me hope. Because when it came to Hebrews 13, God said instead of mentioning all of their faithlessness and their doubting, I'm going to acknowledge their faith. And you know what? God will do the same thing in your life. But you've got to admit those periods of doubt and you've got to push them aside and you've got to go forward just like Abraham and others did. And so I'll not belabor the point this morning, but let me say, if you're here today and you think you're invincible to doubt, you're deceived. You're deceived because you are a frail human being made of dust, made of clay. And I believe one of the greatest hindrances to revival in our churches today, I don't believe it's so much the devil as much as it is our own pride. You say, well, isn't the devil our enemy? Yes, but I don't feel like he has to mess with us too much when we're so puffed up in and of ourselves. We don't want to admit that we're doubting God. We don't want to admit that we have fallen short. But sometimes the best thing we can do is see the doubt in our hearts, expose it for what it is, and say, God, help me. You say, well, that means I have weakness. That's right. But the truth is, He's your strength. So number one, everyone is capable of doubting God. But the second thing that I want to show you is that doubt will cause you to love the bondage of Egypt more than the deliverance of God. Doubt will cause you to love the bondage of Egypt more than the deliverance of God. And I get that from verses 11 and 12. Here they begin to talk to Moses and their hearts are really revealed in this speech. And they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Moses, why did you take us out? And I want to stop and say, well, hadn't y'all been praying for that a long time? But at this point, their doubt has so gripped their hearts, they can't even see straight. Verse 12, is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? Do you hear what they're saying? They said, didn't we tell you back there, leave us alone, Moses? We want to serve these people. These are the same people that made them work in a horrendous fashion, that took the building materials away from them and still had them work as hard as possible. These were the people that beat them with whips and berated them and destroyed them physically. And here they are in a period of doubt and they turn around and they say, oh, we wish we were back there. I think they forgot a few things. I think they forgot the pain and the misery that they were in. You know, it's amazing how sometimes time plays with our memories. You say, what do you mean? Well, you know, it was interesting hearing the old-timers talk when I was a kid. I know I'm quickly approaching the old-timer section. You say, when's the old-timer section? Let's just say it's about 100, all right? That way none of us are offended. But I remember hearing the old-timers talk, and they would say things like this. I was just a little kid sitting down somewhere, and they'd say, oh, don't you remember when we didn't have running water in the house and we used an outhouse? Boy, those were the good old days. I'm sitting there scratching my head. Was it really that good? My grandma's house, whenever I went to Mamaw's house, she had an old outhouse that was down a beaten path that was no longer being used. But I couldn't imagine what it would have been like going to that in February in the middle of the night. I'm sitting there as a young kid, I'm like, you know, maybe that's not as good as you thought it was. Or you remember the good old days when we didn't have air conditioning and we just sat out on the porch until nighttime? And I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, you got air conditioning now? There has to be something to this. Is it really that good? And you know what? Doubt does the same thing. You know what doubt can do to a believer? I'm going to tell you what, doubt can twist a believer's mind so much so till they look back and say, you know, here I trusted Christ, or I'm going through this tribulation. Maybe my life would have been more simpler if I would have just stayed back in that state. Let me tell you, Christian, when you got saved, God didn't promise that everything would be easy, but He did promise He'd be with you. But sometimes the problem's more real to us than God, and doubt makes our minds do some awful things. I want to say, you know, there are people in our pews, I'm telling you, they're searching. There are people in our pews that sometimes they're thinking deeply about things and they're really wrestling with things. I know that we come to church and we all wear our masks. We come, I mean, nobody wants to say you have a bad day when you come to church. How many times a preacher sees you when you come in? How are you doing today? I'm doing great. And that morning we stepped on the cat, we've burnt the toast, we learned we're working overtime that week, and yet, you know, we just come on and we just try to make it happen. But I'm going to tell you, if there's some of you here this morning and you say, I've been wrestling with some things in my heart, and you say, it's turned me upside down, listen, that's exactly what happened to Israel, and it was a sign of doubt. And as long as you live in doubt, you'll live in despair. So the second thing is that doubt will cause you to love the bondage of Egypt more than deliverance of God. Number three, the third lesson that we learn is that when we focus on the visible, we doubt the invisible. Let me say it again. When we focus on the visible, we doubt the invisible. Now, full disclaimer, the world hears that and says, well, duh, because the world says it's what you see, that's what's real. What you don't see, that's not real. But yet for the Christian, we walk by faith, not by sight. Somebody says, well, I've never seen God. I've never seen Him either, but I've seen His creation. I've seen His hand in my life. I've seen His Word, and therefore I believe Him. I trust Him. But that kind of living's foreign to the world. If you're from Missouri, the show me state, if I can see it, I'll believe it. But let me tell you, here's the problem that Israel made. Here's the mistake Israel made. While they're there at the Red Sea, there's only one thing they could hear, and it was this. All they could hear was the approaching hoofbeats of Pharaoh's army. And here was the problem. Those hoofbeats of Pharaoh's army were more real to them than the God who was delivering them. All they could hear was a crowd saying, "Death to Israel! Let's kill them!" All they could hear was the war cries. All they could see were the chariots. All they could hear was the hoofbeats of Pharaoh's army, and it paralyzed them. And here's the mistake they made. They believed the visible more than they believed the invisible. And we get in that situation in our lives. We look around at all that we see, and we begin to despair. You ever been to a point where everything that was collapsing around you and that's all you could see and it brought despair to your heart? You say, oh no, I've never been led to that point in my life. Well, it's good to have you visiting from heaven today. I'm glad you're here. I'm telling you, Christians, sometimes we're guided by more than by what we see around us and the promises of God. And that's what happened to Israel. And I'm not talking down to you because I've been guilty of the same thing. And I'm telling you this morning, God wants to help somebody walk out of this room with hope instead of despair. We have to change our focus. We have to quit paying so much attention to what we see. You know, sometimes what I see and what I know contradicts itself. You know, there's been occasions at the college where I've been put in specific situations, pressure situations, a need for this or a need for that, and what I saw and what I knew were two different things. This last year, we were looking for an elementary education teacher. We had our professor get married. And it came down to June. In the midst of COVID, school starts in August. Only, I guess, school administrator can really appreciate this dilemma. But I'm going to tell you something. You just don't prepare like six college classes overnight and show up and say, all right, we're going to teach class. And I'm going to tell you, what I saw was absolutely nothing. Nobody on the horizon. Nobody. But what I knew was this, that God would meet my needs if I just seek Him earnestly. And it wasn't until June it happened. And boy, I'll tell you, when it did, I was praising God. But you know, there's times we look around and we're like, it just doesn't look good. Listen to me. It didn't look good for Israel. But they focused on the visible instead of the invisible. Let me tell you another thing about this idea of doubting God, is that doubt causes us to call God's character into question. I mean, basically, what are they doing? They're saying, God, You have led us to a dead end. God, what are You doing? That was their conclusion they were coming to in their minds. You know, sometimes doubt causes us to, it just really causes us to question God's love and His care for us. Do you know the disciples? They questioned whether or not God really cared for them. You say, yes, yes. Mark chapter 4, Jesus is asleep in the boat. The disciples come to Him. They say, Master, carest Thou not that we perish? Can I just tell you? They said, don't You care? That's pretty strong language to Jesus, isn't it? Some of you parents, if your kids came and you said, don't You care? You'd say, how dare you say that to me? I brought you into this world. I have paid for your clothing. I have paid for your food. I have put up with so much. Yes, I'll care for you. You'd take offense to that. That's exactly what they did to Jesus. And you know, sometimes doubt causes us to really question God's love and His care for us. Sometimes the way I feel and what I know are two different things. Sometimes the way I feel is forsaken. But what I know is that He'll never leave me nor forsake me. There are times that I feel unloved. But yet the Bible tells me I've been loved with an everlasting love. And there are some of us this morning, we need to quit living by our feelings and start living by what we know. If you're here this morning and you doubt whether or not God really cares for you, listen, the Bible gives you a grand invitation. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse number 7, casting all of your care upon Him, for He careth for you. You ever have people want something from you? Usually it's like money, isn't it? You ever have people want something from you? It may be a possession that you have. But you know what God said in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 7? At that point, it's not, I want all these things from you so that I can profit. He said, no, I want you, just give me your cares. Now, there's nobody else on the face of God's earth like that. He said, just give me your heartache. Give me your burden. You give me your troubles. Why? Because He cares for you. You know, sometimes doubt causes us to doubt God's promises. I mean, God very plainly told Abraham and Sarah, you're going to have a baby. And Sarah's like, that's not happening. I mean, God just plainly said it. You say, how disrespectful. Well, sometimes God just says things to us very plainly, and we just shake our heads. Can't happen. We do the same exact thing. We laugh like Sarah, and we doubt God's promises. My daughter Karis, when she was a little tyke, her two older brothers had scared her to death. at night they would scare her, and she got so terrified she wouldn't sleep by herself. And so she ended up sleeping in our bed. Well, that was cute for about 3 days. But I'm going to tell you, when you wake up with a heel in your ribs or you're almost out of the bed, it gets old fast. And so I thought, I'm going to fix this problem. And so I took Karis and I took her upstairs one night, grabbed her by the arm. I said, you grab your blanket, sleeping bag, and a pillow. And I marched right in the boys' room and I just plopped her down. I said, that's it, boys. I said, she's sleeping with you for the rest of her life. Boy, they started wailing. Oh, I said, no, we're not playing this game. I said, you scared her to death so you can live with it. And I mean, at that point, they're like, oh, Dad, please. No. I mean, now they're crying. It was really great to listen to it for a little bit. Well, finally, we cut a deal, and I said, listen, the only way this isn't going to happen is if you stop it. You got to stop. And they were like, oh, Dad, we just stop it. I said, all right. Well, then I had to get Karis back in her bed, and then that was a scene, you know, for the next few weeks. Sometimes she'd do fine, and then all of a sudden she'd be like, Daddy, can you come in here and sleep with me? And on one of those occasions, I walk in there, and she's like, Daddy, will you sleep with me? And I said, I'll come lay down for a while. She said, no, I want you to sleep in here all night long. I said, well, I'll come lay down for a little bit. And so I pull out the trundle bed beside of her bed that has a mattress made of gravel. And I lay down there, and Karis just start talking about the events of the day, and she'd stop in the middle of her conversation. She'd look down at me, and she'd say, Daddy, you are going to stay in here all night with me, aren't you? I said, well, I'm going to stay in here for a little while. She said, no, I want you in here all night. Well, then I'd get her off topic. I'd be like, well, how's your bicycle doing that Nanny and Pap got you? Oh, Daddy, I love it. And after a while, she just finally looked down at me and she said, Dad, you are going to stay in here all night with me, aren't you? And I said, yes, honey, I will. And I'll never forget, she looked down at me and she said, Dad, you promise? I said, yes, I promise. Now go to bed. But you know what a promise means a lot to a kid, doesn't it? To every parent in here, let me tell you, when you make a promise, I'll tell you what, it's an investment in your child. But you know what? Children aren't the only ones that ought to love a promise. There's some in here, you're full-blown adults and fear has gripped your heart. Listen to me. You let the promises of God bring the same comfort to you that they bring to a little child. But let's continue on. I want you to see number 5, doubt will flee if you go forward. Doubt will flee if you go forward. How do you get rid of doubt? Well, you go to Walmart, go to the pharmacy section, and you'll find right beside of the cough medicine, doubt pills. That's what you take, right? No. You just sit in a chair and count to 10. No. How do you get rid of doubt? Moses illustrates it for us. Notice in verse number 13, and Moses said unto the people, fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show to you today for the Egyptians whom ye have seen today. Ye shall see them again no more forever. Now, I don't have the time to expound on this in Sunday school, but I'm going to tell you, Moses has my greatest admiration because I don't think at this point in the story he knows how they're getting out of this mess. I personally don't think that God passed him cliff notes and said, now listen, in this next chapter you're going to be in this hard place, but this is how it's going to work out. I believe Moses stood before the nation of Israel and said, fear not, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord, having no idea that the Red Sea was going to open up. You say, well, I don't believe that. When you get to heaven, you ask him. He'll tell you. But I really do believe that. I mean, this man's leading this nation and he doesn't know what's about to happen. He's like, all I know is God said he was going to deliver us and let's just be quiet for a minute. But finally, when God gives Moses direction, I want you to notice with me verse 15. And the Lord said unto Moses, wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel, here it is, that they go forward. You know how you get rid of doubt? You just go forward the way that God's directed you. Do you know how you minister in a COVID 2021? You've got to go forward. Do you know how you deal with the uncertainties of life? Listen, there's times I wanted to lay in a fetal position on the floor as a full-grown adult. Just be like, oh, what am I going to do? But listen, when God gives you direction, even when you can't see but just another step or two ahead, the only way you get rid of doubt is go forward. You can't just lay paralyzed. And there are some of you, listen, you may know very well the direction that God has put in your heart, and you know very well that this doubt has gripped you. Let me tell you, Moses told the people, you've got to go forward. They had to take another step to the Red Sea. And with every step that they took to the Red Sea, God was preparing the way where He would make the world's largest fish aquarium. Push the water to the sides. I would have loved to have been in that one. Walking on dry ground and looking to the left and looking to the right and watching the fish as they're watching you. But here's the last thing that I want to show you this morning, and we're done. Some of the sweetest songs you'll ever sing will come after a season of doubt. Some of the sweetest songs that you'll ever sing will come after a season of doubt. You say, well, where did you get that? This is chapter 15. You know, after they make it across the Red Sea, do you know what they do? They sing. Notice chapter 15, verse 1. It says, then sang Moses and the children of Israel this song unto the Lord, and spake, saying, I will sing unto the Lord, for He hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath He thrown into the sea. You know what they do? They lift up their voice and they sing. How would you like it if the song leader came up and he said, all right, this morning we're going to sing together, and we're going to sing a song about horses and riders being thrown into the sea and drowned and dying. That's the song subject today. Oh, that seems a little rough. Music back then was maybe a little different than now, but it was just a song of testimony is what it was. You remember just a few hours earlier, they were weeping. A few hours later, they were singing. I want to tell you, if you're here this morning and you've lived with some doubt in your heart, listen to me, God will give you a song if you'll follow Him. If you'll follow Him in those times of uncertainty, listen to me, God will give you a song. And it'll be a song that'll be a testimony to the whole world of God's goodness and God's grace. You know, some of the greatest songs you'll ever find in a hymnal came after a season of doubt. How would you like to be a prosperous businessman in the city of Chicago? And you send your wife and daughters away on vacation. You send them over to England on a boat. You say, I'll catch up with you as soon as I tie up my business. And then while they're gone, you receive a telegram from your wife, and it has two words, saved alone. And you learn that that ship sunk and your wife alone was saved and your daughters all died. That businessman makes arrangements. He gets over to England as fast as he can. And while he's headed that way, he's informed that they're near the very spot where his daughters perished. And it's in that moment he receives reassurance in his heart. And one day Horatio Spafford writes these words, when peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, Thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul. You know, those words are great on the surface, but when I think about the season in which they came, it helps my heart. So folks, I want to encourage you. We've got a lot of this year left if the Lord Jesus tarries His coming. Go forward.
Don't let doubt paralyze you. If you find yourself living in doubt this morning, I want to beg you, call it for what it is. And go forward and rest assured that if you'll go forward, God will give you a song.